Hi, and welcome back to another exciting episode of Extra Features Interview. Today, Rene Perez is in the house, and this man is crazy. He's a writer, director, editor, cinematographer, and he's got like 5 films about, but he didn't want to send those to us. He only wanted to talk about one. His new film, Insurrection, is going to be out at the end of the show, as always. We'll tell you where to find it. Welcome to the show.
Well, thank you for having me.
So I want to discuss right at the beginning the way you laid out your film. I think it's important. You use a lot of video camera work, and we're seeing a lot of camera work all the time in the house and with you personally. Yes. Now, I think that was obviously an added effect, I would presume.
Yeah, I'm actually using the film camera that filmed the rest of the movie for that, just so it looks nicer. And then I pretend it was filmed on some kind of surveillance camera. Yeah.
Well, that's what I thought. So, do you feel that that was a good way to display your film to come out? I think it works for the format you're doing.
Yeah, it's just, they're just little tiny, few seconds here, few seconds there. But since I'm the cinematographer on these movies too, I'm like really obsessed with the picture always looking its best. So, that's why I went through so much trouble. But yeah, it's just gives it a little bit of a feel like it's being recorded for the public to see. And yeah, just little effects, it's all.
No, I like it. I like it a lot. Now, we have a frame of reference right off. We pick up a guy we need, and it's at the Shasta County Jail. Now, did you have any permits for that, or is that just a straight because it's an outdoor shot, you're free to do it?
We did call them and tell them we were going to be there. I live in a small town where everyone kind of knows everyone, so we did tell them, they're like, I'll just come by, and there wasn't even anyone there, so we knocked on the window to say, hello, we're here to film, and there was no one there, so, yeah.
So, you have a particular alleyway, I'm going to walk you through your film a bit. When we go down the alleyway, did you have any problems with that, or people didn't come out and see what you were up to?
Yeah, there were some of the locals coming out and yelling at us. We told as many people, the mayor came by and said hello, but she didn't tell everyone else what we were doing. So people heard gunshots and came out and yelled at us. When they see the camera and the microphone, the boom mic, and, you know, Michael Paré, it's kind of obvious that we're filming a movie. You know, he stands out. He looks like a movie star. Even when he's not filming. So once they saw us, they knew there was no actual murder happening.
Well, since you brought up Michael Paré, I was going to get into that later. I mean, how did you get a catch like Michael Paré? This guy's in like a billion movies. Like, if you don't know who he is, you don't watch film.
Yeah, even if you don't know his name, you would know his face. That's how well-known he is. I did a cowboy movie maybe about 3 or 4 movies ago. And he was the villain in that. And when I showed up and he looked so good, I was like, why is this guy being the villain? He looks like a hero still. It had been, you know, many years since the 80s, so I didn't know what he was going to look. But he showed up looking like a bona fide action hero. And I was like, well, I'm going to kill you in this one. You're the villain, but I'm going to write something else for you. And sure enough, I did, and I called him and – yeah, we should be filming part 2 of this movie with Michael right now, but we're locked down because of the plague virus or whatever the thing is called. But yeah, he's a great actor and definitely lucky to have him.
Hold on. Now you've already screwed me up. There's a part 2?
There's going to be.
That's cool.
As soon as we can get to filming, yeah.
Well, I think with the virus, nobody can film, but that's great for me. I get lots of interviews because nobody can leave their house. It's kind of working well for me. So let's discuss the musical score. You have no voice at all, except for the last song in the movie, in the credits.
Yeah.
Why is that? Do you think it just would interrupt the film, or?
Well, some movies, this is my 26th movie, and this is the most serious movie that I've done. Usually they're very grindhouse style, and I go pretty crazy with the music, like Miami Vice. I love Miami Vice, so I do the synthesizer score, and then I put songs in it. But this movie, I had to really restrain myself and be an adult. And make non-invasive music, which would be called incidental music. Usually I don't do incidental music. I like the music to take charge, but it didn't work in this one. I didn't do any songs with singing until the very end, because it wouldn't interrupt anything. People were just watching the credits, so yeah.
So hold on, you made 26 films.
And the Insurrection is number 26, yeah.
How do you produce 26 films or even have that time?
Well, over the years, I mean, this is not new. I've been doing this for about 15 years.
That's still two a year.
Yeah. Yeah, well, I have to make that many in order to pay my mortgage. This is, you know, I've got a big house and a big family and, you know, bills to pay. So I've got to make movies constantly or else I just can't pay the mortgage. So, yeah, whether I want to or not, I'm filming movies all year long.
Well, good for you. I think that's great.
I think it's great, too. I love it. You know, I'm the B-movie king. Prolific B-movie guy, I guess.
Well, somebody's got to fill Roger Corman's shoes.
Yeah, well, I think he had more money and more resources than where I'm at. But I get to live in the future, and I have future technology, so I guess it evens out.
So let's discuss your props. I mean, you've done 26 films. Do you just have these props lying around in a warehouse? Guns, money, uniforms?
I have a storage shed which is full of cowboy costumes, medieval knight armor. Yeah, it's full of stuff, and my wife has nowhere to put her Christmas decorations after Christmas. So, yeah, I'm full of props and costumes and machine guns and ninja swords and everything from all the movies I've made over the years.
So whatever comes to mind, I just need to come to your house, and I'm good for Halloween then.
Oh, this would be the Halloween. This is like high-quality movie quality stuff. If you wear a knight's armor, it's heavy metal, you know, that you'd be wearing. So, yeah.
So let's discuss your main actress. I think she's a very important part of the film. If we don't believe in her, your film won't work.
Oh, Wilma is the greatest. I've filmed a few times with her, and she is really a queen among women. She is an awesome girl, and I couldn't even – if I just go on praising her, it will get boring. So go ahead and tell me what you had in mind.
I like the dress. I really thought you presented your – well, the big house, the way she was sitting, the look, I think it worked for me. I really did believe she had the job she had.
She's very regal in real life, you know. And basically she is portraying kind of like a Kathleen Kennedy or someone from Lucasfilm, one of these high up people. And of course, but this girl is young and beautiful as opposed to the other one, which I'm sure is a senior citizen. But she is just like this. I mean, she is literally like a queen, and you you treat her like one, you know. She's a great actress, very believable, and extremely dedicated to being a good actress.
So I did want to pull one of her lines. Porn, liquor, and sex make men stupid.
Well, it takes away your ambition. And it does make you feel like Well, it literally robs you of all ambition. So, and video games make you feel like you have accomplishments. And you can walk away from your couch feeling you've done something. And as a man, your first job is to provide and protect and perform some type of service for the world. Video games take away all of that. Because you get that rush of endorphins that you think you've done something. Oh, my God, I just save the universe or whatever happens in the games. I've never actually played a video game. I'm so old, it's kind of before my time. But I've seen a lot of people, and they ask me to this day, I'm 45 years old, and they say, Renee, have you played the new Star? I'm like, well, I don't know what that is. I can't play them. But I know what happens. And when you have a rich society where we can indulge in our hobbies, thank God we can, they've gone really overboard to make it to where your hobby is the only important thing in the world, which it's not. So That's why she said that.
And you also have many lines. I'm going to have to flip my page here. And you discussed the Me Too movement in pretty heavy detail.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, well, it's just because there are such worse crimes happening as it matters to women and girls in Hollywood. So there is a huge thing happening where there's fake auditions and girls go to these auditions and they get kidnapped, they get injected, and they get used for a few years, and then afterwards they turn up somewhere at a bus station and they're full of disease. It usually happens when they're noticeably pregnant. The child is a heroin addict. The girl takes months to bring her back to life to know where she is. So that is an actual crime. A victim who went to go to a job, a girl who's like, I'm going to try to get this movie role, walks in the door, gets kidnapped by criminals. That should be front page news, especially in Hollywood. But they do have us caring about these social climber chicks who put on their sluttiest dresses in their boob jobs, and they go to these sleazy movie producers at 11 o'clock at night in their hotel rooms, and then they talk about, oh, I was given some kind of indecent proposal. It's like, well, there's a difference between someone offering you, an old man saying, hey, I'll give you this movie role if you have sex with me, and there's a difference between being grabbed by a strong man, held down, injected, taken prisoner. That is the crime that if any of us should be worrying about, should be that one. These social climber chicks, I don't give a crap about. They shouldn't be putting on their sluttiest dresses and going to talk to some greasy old man in the middle of the night. That's stupid. I don't care about stupid people. I care about innocent people. That's what all of us should care about when it matters to crime. Me Too stuff is just to get rid of people's political enemies. I'm sure that fat old guy that they took, the super famous guy that's all over every meme and on Facebook, I'm sure he was someone's political enemy. I was told this was happening at a time where Hollywood was about to get a real expose on the pedophilia by the high-up people, the people who are really high up and who have made Hollywood all through the 80s and 90s. And what they did is they fabricated this whole thing, got rid of that. What's the Jewish guy that they always talk about? Do you remember his name?
In your movie or in general?
He made all those movies. Well, there was some guy that they sacrificed at the altar of political correctness and said that he was offering all these chicks.
Are we talking about Weinstein? Is that what you're looking
for? Weinstein. Okay. There you go. I'm sorry. I know that name.
No, no problem. I didn't know where in your film or in here because I didn't remember the name in the film. So I'm like,
In real life, they sacrificed that guy to clean up all the other, to save face. So then people, the normal people who don't really think about this too much, nor should they, are thinking, wow, Hollywood's really doing a good job of taking care of people. But in reality, they were just, they're sleazy people protecting for higher, sleazier people.
Okay. So, I don't know, maybe it's just with this film. Are most of your films based in reality or just this one?
No. This is the first political whistleblower type movie I've ever done.
Okay. And will part two see more of this?
Part two is more based around the thought of feminizing men. I don't know if you caught the whole virus thing that was in that movie and the insurrection, but it's very odd that that has happened to come true because it's like a weird conspiracy theory that I just threw in there. And sure enough, here we are, let's say 3-4 months from filming, and we're in a global pandemic of virus. So the next movie will talk about how men are being feminized so that they are easily controllable,
So I guess my question is Wilma speaking for you is what I'm getting at through this interview?
Oh, yeah. Every movie is the thoughts of the writer. And the writer is always the person who is – so all the propaganda you're hearing is my propaganda. So the thing that makes it stand out so much, I think, is you're used to hearing the propaganda of a hive mind, of the left-wing Hollywood hive, where you don't succeed in the career by being talented. You climb higher in the hierarchy by, like it says in the movie, by showing that you can be puppeted, by forwarding the agendas that they're wanting to forward. And it's so odd that anyone would ever hear an opposing view, and it makes this movie so controversial just because it goes against that view that you hear from every single Netflix movie, every single Disney movie. They're all the same exact messages of racism, telling you to hate white males, telling you that your kids have to choose what gender they are, even though you can tell what gender they are just by lifting up a blanket and like any other creature, animal on the earth. So I think that's the reason why this is so controversial, and I think ultimately why the reason why the release had to be this way. Everyone's telling me, oh, Renee, it's because you talked about this virus and now it's coming true and they don't want to touch it. But that was such a small part of the movie, and they were just throwaway lines about this virus that's coming. I mean, literally, there's no way I could have known. That was just a conspiracy theory that, you know, happened to come true.
Oh, yeah, it's mentioned right at the beginning and not really touched upon. I agree with you. I mean, but there's tons of movies, but Contagion, Outbreak, it's all very similar stuff. I mean, viruses existed. It works well for your plot. Why would you not put it in?
Yeah, yeah, exactly. So, you know, sadly, our world now represents a B-movie plot. So, I guess that's sad, but makes for entertaining movies.
So I also want to get your blood shots. When the blood squirts out, it looks like a CGI shot to me because they're not really long. Did you thought about using real blood, or that was never an option? Like blood packs.
Yeah, you know, I always use stage blood. They're always squibs and an air pump. In every movie, people think that they're CGI. I don't know where that comes from. We do use CGI because sometimes there's a tube that comes out of the actor, and then, you know, there's a little thing in the front. But I don't know where this comes from. If it was CGI, it would be some ILM kind of top of the line blood effects, but they're not. No, we're too cheap for that.
Well, I think the problem for me with the blood, it wasn't long enough blood. It was just a quick shot. So obviously maybe you've edited out the rest of it, so then maybe that's why it looks like a CGI effect to us.
Oh, that's good to know. I'd better write that down because...
Well, that was to me because I
always think that in my movies. I'm not sure where that comes from.
I wasn't sure because I'm kind of on the fence. Is that CGI or not? Then I convinced myself it was because it was so quick.
No. I do slasher movies too. I do these Havoc slasher movies where you see this long... It's the same kind of blood. It looks the same. And... since those are slasher movies, I let the gore stay for longer. But no, they're all real. When the guy got hit in the head, and everything is just stage blood that we have on set.
Well, good work then. You fooled me. So I'll give you a full shout out for that. At one point in the junkyard, this may be a question I have, a continuity error. One day it looks completely dry, and one day it looks wet. I mean, I'm not saying it couldn't have not rained between the two attacks.
Some days it was raining, very light, and some days it was after the rain. So, of course, we preferred to film after the rain,
uh-huh.
And I had to film in a very shallow depth of field so that you wouldn't see the rain coming down. But yeah, you caught us on that. That's for sure. Some days it was actively raining while they were running around shooting.
So my question is, how was shooting in the mud? Because it looks pretty muddy in that junkyard.
It was as difficult as it was. You know, we had the safe house in the middle of the junkyard because it's a great way to look like you're not making a fortress. It's also tactically a great way to not allow forces to swamp you. You know, they can't surround your house if they're tripping over things. Well, it's such a good tactical idea that it made it impossible to film. I mean, we're scratching your legs, running through things. There's sharp metal pipes ready to make you a soprano if it pokes you in the wrong place. I mean, it was definitely difficult. And even when it wasn't actively raining, it was still wet mud. So yeah, we were slushing around all over the place.
Now, when you're doing your cinematography, you seem to do two main shots. You do a close-up shot down the barrel. Now, is that over-the-shoulder shot, or is that you, somebody else holding the gun, not Perret, when you're shooting it?
Well, there are times where I do the reverse, and I'm hanging on to Perret's rifle, and there's times where I'm putting the camera and holding the machine gun with one hand and firing at the people. So, it just so you see what he sees. One of the things, because this movie was serious, more of a serious tone, I wanted to convey the reality of how difficult it is to shoot a moving target. In movies, that's not usually the case. They shoot one. If you have six guns, you shoot, you know, six bullets, you shoot six guys. But in reality, it is extremely difficult to hit a moving target, even if you're a commando, especially when you're in this terrain that's hard to deal with. So I did want to show the distances that were involved and a little bit more accurate as opposed to stylized way of showing a shootout, you know. So, yeah, sometimes I did do the what Paré was seeing point of view, first person.
Scared you on that question, didn't I? Do you always use the same crew? Like, you made 26 films. I'm thinking, do you use the same action people, or do you have a different lighting crew, or how do you do that?
Well, there is no crew. I'm the only crew member.
So you do the lighting?
So my actors are the crew.
You do everything.
What was that?
You do the lighting, you do this, you do that.
On filming, I do it all. When I'm done filming, I have post-production two helpers. Guthrie Lowe is my sound designer. He does all the sound. And I have VFX people who erase blood pumps and, you know, whatever errors I'm trying to clean up on a movie. So, but yeah, for filming, it's just me and my actors. And my actors help me rig up the blood pumps and help me unload the trucks. And I put the lights where they need to be. And I say, bring the lights over here. I'll set them up. And It's like guerrilla filmmaking, I guess, you know.
Wow, I'm impressed, Matt. That is a lot of work for yourself.
Yeah, it definitely is a lot of work. So that's where all the gray hairs come from.
Let's discuss some stuff we haven't discussed. I mean, location shooting. How do you find a junkyard?
Well, that's probably the easiest location to try to find. But I think I just asked around, hey, you know, who's got a junkyard that I could film at? I think it was actually the pastor of my church who suggested that we call this guy called Cowboy Jack, who had a apocalyptic-looking location that was not too far away from my house, and that's where I went.
And is Cowboy Jack as fun as his name presents?
Oh, he is. I'm going to hope that he can hear this. Cowboy Jack, and this is going to be a strange situation that I'm just about to tell you, is a guy who survived being bitten in half by a shark. And if you ask him, he'll pull up his shirt and show you the scars. But he's just an old guy who's been through it all and let us film there on all that property he had. And it was very interesting. Very interesting for us to hear someone who survived such an attack. And I thought I think he got a kick out of having us running around playing, you know, soldier around his property. So, yeah, that's it. You know, this time it was a junkyard. And in other movies, I've had castles, I've had cowboy towns, volcanoes. I mean, this one was so down to earth, this story, that it was, you know, I was so happy that it was just the down-to-earth locations that it was.
So the last location to have in the film is a shot of a farm. I think it's a farm, or it's a house with animals. So I'm presuming it's a farm.
Yes. Yeah. It's a ranch-style home. Yeah.
So how'd you get that
one? They do have ghosts there. Oh, that was just one of my friends who played one of the commandos. And he had this very, you know, rural-looking ranch-style house, and he said we could look at it, and I said, yeah, it looks great, and we just filmed there. So, yeah, this movie, trust me, it's no, it's so down to earth. It was literally the easiest location scouting I've ever had to do on any movie. So, yeah, that was just a friend's house, and he was one of the commandos that got killed by Michael Poiré, and yeah.
I do want to discuss the nudity in the film. It just sort of shows up, which is fine. I didn't have an issue with it. Now, do you tell, how do you express to an actor or actress how you're going to do it, or an actor in general, hey, I need some nudity. Are you okay with that?
Oh, this is no problem at all. I do slasher movies where there's boobs through the whole damn movie. But, you know, this is just a job. And I tell them, I say, hey, this is the thing. There's nudity in it. There's this in it. I also tell them if they're going to be covered in blood the whole time, which is a very good possibility. But, you know, it doesn't really matter to me. I talk to people. If they get offended or whatever, I'm like, whatever, fine, don't do it. but it's just being an actor. If actresses are not cool with being nude, it's kind of like meeting an action hero who doesn't want to wear a cool costume because he thinks he's too good for it or whatever. If the people are too good for it, then they should go and wait for another phone call. Getting into a movie is so incredibly rare, and especially into a commercial release movie, a legit movie, is so incredibly rare. If you're going to give up the opportunity just because of titties, that's pretty lame. You know.
I have to ask.
But yeah, this is the least amount of nudity. So if you, the movie that just came out last week, Cabal, that's titties all over the place. Poke your eye out on watching that movie with titties.
Sorry, you're making me laugh.
No, I'm very just a normal macho guy. I'm not politically correct. I just tell the girls, hey, there's nudity. You know, that's just how it is. So, you know, you get paid. It's a job.
I'm going to be laughing about this for weeks. Being a one-man crew, how do you do your catering then?
Well, luckily the girls took care of us. They got into the house and they were just took over the kitchen and started using the real house that we were using as a set, you know, had a real kitchen, and they just made food. So, and they actually made very good food. I was like, this is the luckiest. Usually we're going to McDonald's and buying $1 burgers, you know, the $1 menu. And on this movie, we ate really well. So thanks to the girls for taking care of that.
Well, that's great. I think you've answered everything. We're going to move on to fun questions. Because your first time ever being on the show, I have to ask you your favorite film. Oh, wait, no, I had one more question. I lied. Let me back this up for a second.
Okay.
You mentioned Rosemary's Baby is mentioned. It's the only film you mentioned. Why?
Well, originally I did have a lot of movies in mind to mention. Because there are so many movies that are used as propaganda to make humans go against their nature. But Rosemary's Baby is one that took place before they knew how to cover everything up. So the director actually did get convicted of pedophilia and is not able to come into this country to this day. So, and also it's a movie that's always for free because the message is so important to the my conspiracy theory, the elite who like to keep all of us cattle dumb, you can always find that movie everywhere. It's a constant thing. Also, it is shocking to see how long ago it was. So that's a good reason. But we did talk about George Lucas and Star Wars being taken over and all that kind of stuff. Not that he's the villain. He's actually the hero. The villains are the ones who have taken his property and turned it into an ugly work of propaganda. You know, it used to be good propaganda. It used to be a good propaganda that showed little boys mainly the how you could notice a hero. You know, usually stories are important because you see a hero being heroic and then you take a little bit of that with you in your life. And you think how you could be more of a hero in your life. Maybe you can't save the galaxy like Luke Skywalker, but he's a good role model. And now they've changed that into ugly propaganda, which would make you weak. Oh, you want to be a Jedi? Just say you're a Jedi. oh, you want to be this? Well, just take it away from that person. They don't deserve it anyway because they're part of the patriarch. Well, that only breeds weak people. If you had a generation of people built up on that myth, it would have a crybaby generation of self-entitled weak people, as opposed to the good heroic story that Lucas made. So that's why he's out. And, you know, his movies are just a tool now to indoctrinate people, sadly.
I'm glad I didn't miss that question. That was a good answer. Since it's your first time on the show, your favorite film?
My favorite film is probably Empire Strikes Back. Or The Wrath of Khan, or The Good, the Bad, and the Ugly. They change top places.
Fair enough. One film you should have seen and never have.
I'm sorry, say that again?
One film you should have seen and never have.
One film that I should have seen. Oh, God, there's so many. I'm at the mercy of whatever my wife rents. There are millions of movies I wish I have seen that I haven't seen. I've never seen Phantasm 1. And I have loved Phantasm 2. And actually, I've never seen any of the Phantasm movies except for Phantasm 2. And I even filmed with one of the actors from the Phantasm series, Reggie Bannister. So, yeah, that's definitely my... I just admitted a crime here.
Well, I was about to say it had to be Reggie Bannister. I think he's the one that works the most, unless you worked with Angus years ago. Okay, last question.
I would have loved to work with Angus.
Who are you thanking in your Oscar speech?
Oh, I wouldn't go to the Oscars. I don't know. If I was thanking anyone, I guess I would thank my wife, and I really don't know. I wouldn't go to the Oscars. I wouldn't be invited to the Oscars. There's no chance of it ever happening. If they're thinking about inviting me now, listen to me now, Hollywood. I don't want to go. I don't like y'all. I wouldn't go to your filthy place, even if you asked me to. And judging art is wrong. You know, there are more people on this planet that listen to Beyonce as opposed to listening to Beethoven. So are they wrong? No, they're just subjective. Art is subjective. You like whatever you like. And some guys like me like silly movies like The Empire Strikes Back, and to me, it's great. Other people might think it's laughable and they only like highbrow cinema. But art is subjective. It should never be judged in that way.
Well, thank you for your fabulous answers. And before you go, tell everybody where they can find your new film.
Well, the new film, The Insurrection, if you go to thedarkestmachines.com or if you just go to Vimeo, you will find a link to download it or rent it, whatever you want to do. It's available now.
Thank you for your time and have a great evening.
Thank you.
Hey, I just want to say thank you for listening to this great interview. We have more on our website at www.extrafeatures.ca. And if you enjoyed it, can you please go to iTunes and leave us an iTunes review and like us on our Facebook page? Thank you.